Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my fine friends. Welcome to another edition of Rahalastapa, this week with the co-creator of Father Ted and Toast of London, and much, much more, Arthur Matthews. We have 2 copies of his book, not 20 like we did last week. All the Nels Gavel ones have gone. We will be giving those. One will go to the monthly Badger Prize winner. So if you want to want a chance of winning that in the end of month draw, go to gofasterstripe.com/badges, sign up, £3 a month. All of November's money is going to Movember, and all the rest of the money from other months, if you carry on subscribing, will go to making more podcasts and more exciting stuff. You get lots of other stuff, including loads of behind the scenes videos, a badge, membership pack, lots of things. And a chance to win that book. Plus, we'll draw one other name out of there of all the monthly badges to give the other copy to. And we will do that at the end of November. So you still have a few days to join up if you want a chance to win those fantastic prizes. If you win the monthly badge competition, which is every single month, and you'll be in every single draw, then you win a big box of merchandise and all sorts of stuff. So it's well worth winning. Plus, you get money to give to us to make more podcasts. If you would like to buy my book, The Problem with Men, do so as I speak. And I hope as you're listening to this, the Kindle version of that book is down to 99p. That seems like a bargain to me. I think the audiobook is the best way to get this. Go get that from Apple Books or Audible or wherever you get your audiobooks. There's also hardback copies of the books. Remember, you can still get that from gofasterstripe.com, and you'll get a lovely book plate with my autograph and a penis drawn on them. That one I'm holding up is one of the ones that did not pass the quality test, but that gives you an idea of what it will be. There's penises all in the borders as well. It's amazing. So let's sit back, let's relax, let's enjoy
Rahalastapa. Oh, and do tune in to Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun. We're putting sketches in now as well. It's getting very exciting. Relax and listen to Rahalastapa, or watch it, Rahalastapa, with Arthur Matthews. Hello! Welcome a man who's been drawing cocks on pieces of paper. You can get my book at gofasterstripe.com and get that to stick in the front. That's my autograph and a penis. Oh, what a light. What a 53-year-old man I am. Welcome to Richard Herring's Landscaping Seasons Total Podcast. Come on, that's not bad. And look where I am. Can you take the rehearsal? Oh, very good, Chris. Look at that. I'm here. It had to be done. I'm at the Four Seasons Total Landscaping. Landscaping Seasons Total. It almost works. I was talking to some... I was getting some hydro seeding at Four Seasons Total Landscaping, and the bloke serving me the hydro seeding, which I looked up on their website and is a thing, he says he calls it Rahalastapa, so I don't know if that's going to catch on. So, what's been going on this week? The moustache is growing. Go to rahalastapa.co.uk/Movember if you are enjoying all this stuff and would like to make a donation to charity. That will go to Movember. Also, any Twitch subscriptions or badge money this month will go to Movember. It's dropped off a lot, the Twitch subscriptions, so I hope you're giving them to someone if you're not giving them to us. If you've got Amazon Prime, you can give us money for free. Please do that, and that money will go to charity. I was playing with my son at bedtime the other day. We were playing Star Wars. He's into Star Wars. We use... put the picture up, Chris. The buttons aren't working today. He has a swimming noodle. This is what it's like. In the old day, we used to have armbands. They've got noodles now, big kind of polystyrene things that you bash against each other. Not good for me because I don't like polystyrene. But we were playing Star Wars, and he said, "I'm Darth Vader." He's 28 years old. He's 3 years old. And I said, "Oh, well, I'm Luke Skywalker." Felt a bit weird because, you know, the generations were reversed. But then I thought he might remember the bit, so we were fighting, and I said, "You killed my father." And he didn't say anything. And so I said, "What do you say?" And he went, "Sorry," which I think would be a much better... I think they should remake the film and have Darth Vader going, "You killed my father. Sorry, sorry I did that. It was bad of me." I think that'd be a better film. It's no good. I'm sorry, spoiler alert. Darth Vader's his dad, turns out. So I've been back on the TV a lot again this week. Taskmaster, of course, unfairly penalised as usual. Very crucial team task where we fought against each other. It was a 10-point task because Daisy got 5 points. If I'd got 5 points, she's now about 7 or 8 points ahead. I'd be 2 or 3 points ahead if it had gone the other way. Could prove crucial. If we get to the end, stop the count. Whatever the results, I've won. That's what I'm saying. You can't trust the marking. I was on Sunday brunch this week. Next picture. Chris, next picture. Oh, no, it wasn't the next picture. I was on... Leave it, I'll do this one first. I was on House of Games this week. I asked a question on House of Games, which I enjoyed. I'm obsessed with the historical figure Rasputin, who has been cruelly misrepresented in popular song. He never made love with the Tsarina. He was probably not even in the top 10 of Russian-based love machines. And he was a human, not a cat. It was a bit of a shame how he carried on, though, so Boney M got something right. He was supposedly very hard to kill, but in which city did he finally make his end? I quite enjoyed doing that question for House of Games. I was on... press the next button. I was on Sunday Brunch. There it is. That's me on Sunday Brunch. Oh, there's another one of me on Sunday Brunch as well. Is there one... is there another picture there, Chris? Or is it just go... Try the one underneath it.
Okay.
Hi, Chris. No, it's not on there. I've spent a great long time putting up pictures. Go back to that one. It's fine. I was on Sunday Brunch where I... great show. I had this moustache. You can sort of see it there. I look like my own dad. And they never explained why I had a moustache. So they just all obviously thought I was... I took Tim Lovejoy. I gave him a cursed stone from the stone field. So hopefully that will finish him off. And I had a biscuit war with Shirley Ballas from Strictly Come Dancing. We strongly disagreed about biscuits. That's how my week's been going. She thought ginger nuts are the worst biscuit, and I think they're the best. And I'm correct. So that's the end of that. Anyway, coming up as well, I'm TV in the next couple of months. I'm on Tipping Point at the end of the month, I think. And I'm on The Chase, I think, on Christmas Day. That's your Christmas Day entertainment. They can't keep me off the telly. I just want to be not on the telly. That's all I want. Look, if you're enjoying these things, please do give to Movember, rahulastapa.co.uk/Movember. Not if you've given loads of money before or anything before, but there's tens of thousands out there of you out there who've never given a solitary bean. Why not give some money to Movember, which is a fantastic charity? I'm going to look increasingly stupid. A, this has taken me 10 days, 11 days to grow this pathetic moustache. And it's not going to be anything by the end of the month. Do check out other stuff on Twitch. Richard R.K. Herring, twitch.tv/RK Herring. Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun on Thursdays. Got to be seen to be believed. All right, let's crack on. My guest this week is probably best known for being the drummer in the Joshua Trio. That's why we're all here tonight watching this. Will you please welcome the amazing Arthur Matthews, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. Yes, by magic, he is here. Hello.
Hello there.
Oh,
hi.
My goodness. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, not bad, actually. Not too bad.
Having fun. Is that your bedroom?
No, it's a kind of spare bedroom.
Okay, that's nice.
That's an office, and yeah, it's used a bit, but okay. Not all the time.
Yeah,
it's an attic. It's in the attic.
I'm in the attic as well, but you.
I'm not.
I'm at the Four Seasons. I nearly gave it away. I think they were fooled. Tell us about your time drumming in the Joshua Trio. Joshua Trio.
Well, I was in a magazine. I worked in a magazine in Dublin called Hot Press doing layout as a graphic designer. And someone called Paul Woodfull joined, and we both used to, when we were laying out the magazine, we used to sing a lot of U2 songs, but in a kind of jazzy kind of way or a country way.
Right.
So we said, let's form a band. So we got together, the Joshua Trio. I was the drummer. Paul was the Bono Jesus figure. It was Bono, but dressed as kind of Jesus in a white robe and very long hair. And Paul's brother was the bass player.
Sweet.
We used to play pubs. But the best thing we did was we once got a donkey into a pub because Paul in the Bono Jesus figure just got on the donkey and we brought him in through the health and safety nowadays.
Wouldn't be allowed.
But so we brought it in through the side and onto the stage at this pub called the Bag It Inn in Dublin. So that was the highlight of it. We used to play off. We did a parade, a St. Patrick's Day parade or something in Cork.
Okay.
On the back of a trailer. And we came across some of the Irish Army, the battalion of the Irish Army or something. And Paul, as Bono said, throw down your weapons. So we did a few TV shows as well. They did Rapido. I'd left.
Okay.
And they remember Rapido? They
I
did
do.
That in Britain, yeah. London.
Yeah, we did.
So we did a few TV things. And we there was a bit about us in Rolling Stone as well.
Blimey.
Yeah.
It's full on. And this was before the script writing happened, right?
Yeah, well, I was there in Hot Press and I met Paul and Graham Linehan came in. He was discovered by one of the other writers. And he started doing film reviews, and I got to know Graham. We did a few comedy sketches, me and Paul and Graham. And then Graham went off to London, and then he said, do you want to come to London and write some sketches? So I went over to London. We wrote for Smith & Jones, 1991.
Yeah.
And you were around then.
Just around then, yeah. Well, I remember meeting you guys. I think the first time I met you, I think I might have met Graham before, but I might be wrong. We went, you and him and I and Stu and Paulie McGlynn went to a pub and had a drink. And I didn't know, I was a big fan of Father Ted, and I didn't know who this Paulie was. And I think about 2 hours into the conversation, you explained that she was Mrs. Doyle from Father Ted. And she didn't look like Mrs. Doyle in real life, though. But I think you all assumed that I would have known that. So I think I was a bit of a pillar.
Pauline, I once met, I was in Dublin Airport in the hospitality lounge when they used to give free wine out.
Yeah.
So don't do that anymore. But Jonathan Miller was in the hospitality lounge.
Right.
And I thought, well, Jonathan Miller, wow. So I must introduce myself to him. So he left, but he left. I didn't see him in the lounge. He left with all the hundreds of books, like, you know, all his medical books and all the books he wrote. All those, you know, classic Jonathan Miller. But when we arrived in Heathrow, I said, I'd go up and I'd introduce myself to him because Pauline was in a play that he directed.
Okay.
So that was why. So I was in the lift alone with Jonathan Miller.
Yeah.
And I said, I hope you don't mind, but big fan of yours. I think, you know, blank. No, he didn't react at all. Was, excuse me, I know someone who I think you directed in a play, still blank. Pauline McGlynn, absolute complete blank still. And then I made a terrible mistake. I said, because I'm one of the writers, she's in a show called Father Ted, and I'm one of the writers. And then the doors opened of the lift, and he said, I'm sorry, I don't watch television. And then just kind of waltzed off.
Oh, no. Well, you've already answered an emergency question without me asking it, which is who's the most famous person you've been in a lift with? So thank you very much.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
yeah, that's very good. Oh, no, it's terrible. Well, I actually bumped, was it Dublin Airport? I bumped into, that's the last time I saw you. I bumped
into, no, it was Luton Airport.
Luton Airport, was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I was on the way. I think I'd come back from gigs in either Belfast or Dublin. I can't remember where I'd been. I haven't
yeah,
really
been. We were flying back to Dublin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, I was just coming back from Dublin, I think. Yeah,
it's the only time I've been in Luton Airport. But that's the nearest airport to you.
It is. That's one near my house. So that was. It's very convenient for me.
Yeah. This is quite an amusing story about my uncle, who was a priest, Uncle Tom, and a lot of the Father Ted things are kind of based on him. But he had an idea once. He used to come over to Dublin, to Ireland, every few years to say my mother's anniversary mass, like on the anniversary of her death. Okay. And he used to say it in my uncle's, another uncle's house, but he couldn't do it one year. So he said to us, me and my sister, this year, I tell you what, I'll meet you in the airport and we say the mass. I'm hiring a car to go down to Wexford. So we can say the mass in the car. So we met him in the hire place with the cars in Dublin Airport. Myself and my sister got in the back of the car and he said mass. Okay. He was at the steering wheel and he said mass. And he'd all the stuff in the back, like all the wine and hosts and all that.
Right.
And we were looking at him in the mirror. And he just said, you know, he did a little sermon about my mother. And so it was a very short mass, 15 minutes. But, you know, it's when you... Where do you get your ideas from, Father Ted? And it's just exactly that kind of thing. My uncle was great for that kind of thing.
What would Jesus make? If only he'd known, Jesus would have known that one day that would happen, that people would be driving around doing mass in a car.
Exactly.
For him.
Yeah.
How would he be?
Well, he wasn't driving around. It was a stationary car.
Okay,
it would have been better, obviously, if he were on the move. That would have been excellent. But it was just there, it was in the car, and then we saw these air hostesses and captains passing by.
Oh, wow. So yeah. Your upbringing was obviously fairly religious. We had a lot of Catholicism and Catholic fathers.
Yeah, two of my uncles, yeah. Uncle Tom was the youngest.
Right.
And he'd gone off to Birmingham, so he was quite liberal. But Uncle Paddy, he was the oldest of my mother's family. He was very conservative. But I had a brilliant experience with him as well, because once I was alone at home with my mother and sister in the kitchen cooking him something to eat. And I was just found myself alone in the living room, and on television was Prince live in concert. just the two of us. And we didn't say anything. And he just at one stage, he just looked at Prince and said to me, what the hell would be going on in his mind? So I don't know, Uncle Paddy.
Yeah, probably Prince was equally confused by, if he'd seen Uncle Paddy, he would have been as equally
confused.
That's the thing.
Yeah, I think they wouldn't have been much in common, really.
So at what point, I'm presuming you aren't still heavily religious. I may be misstepping there. At what point did at what point did you, were you religious as a child, or did you?
Well, everybody was, man.
Yeah.
There were no non-religious people, no non-Catholics in Ireland.
Right.
There was someone called Michael O'Riordan, who was chairman of the Irish Communist Party in Cork. And when people knew he was a communist, and when he walked down the street, people would cross the road and bless themselves
right.
in the song.
Yeah.
So there were about three non-religious people in Ireland at the time.
Right. Because I have a similar, not quite as extreme. I'm the other lot, the Protestant lot. So I hope that's not going to be. I know that can be a problem
for
you guys. But I was brought up in a fairly religious family, but like at about the age of eight, kind of turned against it. But it was always hanging. You know, it's a difficult thing to shake off. And even when I was doing religious comedy, in my 20s and 30s, I found that I found I was quite nervous still. about doing
absolutely.
It. Was it the same for you with doing Father? I mean, I'm not that. Yeah, I mean, Father Ted's a very loving portrait, I think. But it's
Well, you know, Catholic guilt, as they say, is a thing. And like I was pretty, you know, seriously. It was the time of The Exorcist and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so it was pretty. I had a kind of crucifix in my bedroom behind my head. And I was kind of worried it might start moving around.
Yeah.
So I took it down. But no, I was quite seriously disturbed by it, so I had to give it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird. And how have your family reacted to if they're still living, any of these?
Well, they reacted to it by dying.
Dying. Shame.
My father was quite religious. My mother was, for a woman of her age. She wasn't that religious.
Right.
She'd. My father was very old. He was born in 1903.
Yeah,
so very religious. Yeah, but my mother was. She again, like all her family, kind of moved to England. She was a nurse during the Blitz in London.
Yeah,
and she cared for the. She was in Hammersmith and she was in Epsom, and she cared for the Dunkirk survivors when they came back from Dunkirk. And then she in Epsom, she was dealing with Blitz survivors.
Okay.
And her best friend was killed by a bomb in Hammersmith.
Wow.
So then she came back to Ireland. And she met my father. My father was quite old and his mother was in the hospital that my mother was a nurse in.
Okay.
So she was looking after his mother and then she ended up looking after him.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So he was sort of in his mid-50s when you were born.
He was 56, yeah.
Yeah.
And my daughter, I have a daughter now, and she was, I was 50 when she was born.
Right.
So her grandfather was born in 1903.
So like 100 years, over 100 years before she was born, that's kind of...
Well, no, not quite. It was 97. Well, 90. Actually, yeah. As good as 100.
As near as, damn it. It's incredible. I mean, I love things like that, where the way history works like that, where there's, you know, technically still someone, till quite recently, there was still someone getting... American Civil War pension because they'd married some really old guy when they were really young.
If you think of it, someone who is alive now, their lives would have overlapped with someone who was alive at the time of like Waterloo in 1815.
Right.
So if you're born in 1815 and you live to be 105, and then someone born 105 years ago is still alive.
Yeah. Yes, I love it. Well, I love all that sort of stuff, but... let's talk. It's kind of fascinating because you sort of fell into TV script writing almost by accident, almost like just going, oh, we'll give that a go.
Yeah, no, I did, completely, yeah.
And you were very quickly established, I would say, you know, you were successful pretty quickly as well, but you came to London and you were straight away writing for Smith & Jones and staying in Griff Rhys Jones's house, right? Is that right?
Yeah, we were, where were we first? In Bounds Green.
Okay.
But the first day I was in London, we didn't have a television or anything, but I turned on the radio and I heard On the Hour.
Yeah.
As a kind of, I didn't know what it was, so I thought maybe this is a real news program. you were credited at the end of it.
I was.
So that was 1991, and I kind of remember we were going to buy a television, and I remember saying, maybe we should get a black and white television. Because it might be a bit cheaper. It sounds like it was the 1950s. But it wasn't. It was the beginning of the modern era of
well, it was weird. I was thinking about it because, like, when we moved to London, we rent. You could still rent TVs. You know, there was a place called Radio Rentals, wasn't there? But we rented a TV for all of our early... flats, I think. In fact, when I moved out of one place and they didn't come and pick it up, and I left it downstairs and they never came and picked it up, and we were still being charged, and the people just kept the people we left it with just kept the telly. It's kind of crazy to think that's like that feels like something from the Victorian time, apart from it being a television. It feels like,
but you're right, we did end up we sent a few sketches into Smith & Jones, and then we got a call from Jim Pullen, who was the script editor. And then we went in to meet Mel and Griff, and I remember they had this was in Talkback in their offices in Percy Street, which you know. And Mel was there and Griff was there, and they someone brought coffee in, and I'd never seen this, like, it's this very naive young lad from Ireland. Actually, it wasn't that young. But the coffee, you know, that you have to press the thing down. I didn't know you had to press it down, so I started pouring it before that. What they must have thought. But anyway, yes, we did. Griff had loads of houses in London.
Right.
Or, well, as he got, you know, richer and more successful, he'd have houses. So he had one house in Kilburn, of all places, that we ended up living in. And I remember... once there, Graham had loads of books. He had millions of books in the bookcases, and we were watching television once. They all collapsed. The bookcases, it was like a bomb going off. And we had to tell Griff, because he's the landlord, and he was a bit annoyed because he said, "Oh well, I put those shelves up."
Could have killed you.
It could have. But Griff was great. I'm very fond of Griff, and he was really very good to us. We never knew Mel quite as well, but Griff was really good to us. Yeah.
That's good. I mean, that's sort of, it sounds like, you know, just sounds so unlikely. And loads of people start in such an unlikely way and get going so quickly, and then to sort of turn up in London and within a few months be living in the house that is owned by one of the blokes from Not the 9 o'clock News. Was it easier to get into TV in those days? I mean, perhaps it was.
I don't know. I mean, the first thing we did was write something for a Lenny Henry radio show.
Right.
A sketch for that.
Yeah.
But we just sent scripts into Smith & Jones, and they, I mean, I don't know how long later, but so yeah, come in and meet Mel and Griff.
Yeah.
And then we did a few things in the series they did in 91. And then we were in Talkback, and that was when The Day to Day was being made. So Coogan was around, and Armando Annucci was around. And then Jeffrey Perkins, because we were writing Father Ted as well, and we sent that in, and that was Jeffrey Perkins in Hat Trick. Hmm. And then Jeffrey Perkins said, Charlie and Paul are starting up a show called The Fast Show, so do you want to meet them? So we remember meeting them. But The Fast Show was sold to us as it was like Ronan Martin's Laughing.
Yeah.
And it was really... that kind of thing. And it turned out a bit different from that.
Yeah, it did, I guess. Yeah.
But that was great. I mean, as you know, because you were around, very much part of that early 90s, mid-90s thing was a great time.
Yeah. There was a lot of great stuff going on, as to be said. I was interested to see, I think I heard in another podcast you were talking about that you wrote the Amish Bill Grundy sketch.
That's
probably the standout sketch in Kevin Holden's excellent series that he did a few years ago. You've been trying to push that for years.
I tried to push it on to... it was originally written for Big Train, but there wasn't a third series of Big Train. So I remember, who did I give it to? Paul and Harry and Paul. And I said to Paul White, Paul said, "Oh yeah, I really like this, but I don't think Harry will do it." it's fair enough. But that was such a great... That's all that is an idea. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Just recreate the Bill Grundy Sex Pistols interview with... They're all just dressed as Amish people.
Yeah.
That's all it was. That's, you know, you don't have to write anything.
Sometimes that's all you need. It was just a recreation, wasn't it? So it wasn't even, let's rewrite it with Amish words.
No, that's all it is. It was just a line. It was a line on the page. That's all it was.
Great sketch. But it's sort of interesting to think that that's the way it can go, that you can keep presenting the same sketch to different shows.
But that's because I had unswerving belief in the sketch.
But I think I think Kevin Eldon was the right person to... I mean, that's very much his wheelhouse as well, Bill Grundy, the Sex Pistols. But I think it was so good.
I could probably still give it to someone else, because enough time has passed.
Well, it's but go on.
I heard about some... Who was it? Johnny Spate or some script writer?
Yeah.
Who actually did that? He wrote one script for one show, and then he had to write an extra script for another show, and he just gave them the same script that had been done already for another show.
I definitely feel... I mean, there's been jokes that I've recycled a lot and bits that I've recycled a lot throughout when you've been working for 30 years, but absolutely, especially if the thing isn't very successful, you know, there's no one's going to know about a sketch you did in... six pairs of pants or one of those kind of 90s sketch shows that had a brilliant cast but didn't quite make it if you could, you know, you could definitely reintroduce stuff. But yeah, it's funny. There's definitely sitcom ideas that I've probably given in three times over the 30 years. They've all, it's failed at every, probably got a little further each time before, but I've been paid for it three times, so I think that,
good,
that's almost
good.
Like doing a series.
That's how to play the system.
Just keep on going. There you go. I do a lot of writing for things.
Here's the thing, though. You must always remember to change the title of it.
Yes. Well, I suppose.
That's a little tip.
I'm very good at going in. I get, but they think, "Oh, Richard Hanger, you'll write stuff." I'll go in. They'll pay me to do something, and they go, "Yeah, no, this you can't write for this." I seem to have made, you know, good at this. Out you go. But I seem to have got enough reputation. I was on Spitting. I had a conversation with Spitting Image. I was commissioned for 5 minutes of Spitting Image, and then I sent some stuff in the new version. And they didn't seem very excited about it. So, and I had loads of ideas. They didn't say anything. So I thought, oh, they don't really like it. Then they called me up to say, said, "You're meant to do 5 minutes. You've only done 3.5 minutes. Do you want to write another 1.5 minutes, or do you want to get paid for only 3.5 minutes? And I said, honestly, you don't have to pay me. But well, it obviously didn't. It obviously wasn't what you were looking for. But yeah, like again and again, I keep on taking on these jobs. And reputation's a good thing, right, Arthur? You can just, you know, as long as the reputation doesn't become he's the bloke who comes, gets paid and doesn't do a freaking job.
Yeah, that's not just, that's a bad reputation.
Just about. Well, I like doing my own thing. I mean, you must be the same as well. Now, it's sort of it's a weird thing to. I only did the Spitting Image thing because I had an idea for something that they didn't like about Prince Andrew that they didn't want to do. And they said, oh, well, write something else. And I'd only really wanted to write the Prince Andrew thing. And I like the idea of being connected in both, you know, I did a few sketches for the original Spitting Image, and it'd been nice to have been in the
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, I wasn't that excited that I was going to spend.
Is it? It's a completely new team, I presume, working on.
I think it is. I think I might have been possibly the only link. I think maybe Stephen Allen might have been involved in it at some point. So I think they might have had a few people. Few people across, but yeah, it was very much a last minute thing, but yes, anyway let's move on from that. Let's talk about your book, and let's make sure we do that, because I don't want to forget that. Oh no, look, it's
a shiny cover.
It's see-through, like my book's see-through against this background as well. The Cummings Files, which could be a very different book if it didn't have a picture of Dominic Cummings on the front. But it's a diary of even within the diary, Dominic Cummings writes that someone's bound to write a diary of me about my year's spoof diary. Can I sue them for that? How can they get away with it? So you write him asking that. How do you get away with writing? I mean, it does have your name there at the side, but it's quite hard to see. How do you get away with writing something that, although it's clearly a spoof, is, you know, easy to read as... but I mean, because it's so fictionalized within...
Yeah, no, it's... well, I mean, it wasn't my idea. I was approached by Louisa Joyner. We did a Toast London book,
right,
that I did with Matt Berry. So I did a book with her, Toast London book. And she asked me in January, do you want to do a Dominic Cummings book, like a spoof diary or something? This was January.
Right.
So I said, probably isn't enough to work on. But then, I don't know if you remember, in March, something happened.
Yeah,
can't remember. We sped up north and went to Castle Barnard. And so I said, yeah, I could probably do something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's what it is. It's a spoof diary and like his blog thing. But it's actually quite, you know, It's rather silly.
It's very silly. It's a lot of fun. There's a, you know, I thought, oh, what's this going to be like? But you've put in a lot of thought. It's very inventive. You know, you've created.
I haven't put a lot of thought.
Well, no, but you've created a character for him, which I like, because it's not the obvious way to go. He's sort of obsessed with Bismarck, isn't he? And
yeah, well, that the real Cummings. Yeah, no, that is real, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't do, the research I did was kind of read his Wikipedia entry, that was it, really. And so, yes, he's very interested in Bismarck, and I read his blog a few times.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's no way this Dominic Cummings is any way like the real one.
But
I don't know what he's like. I don't know what he's like. I mean, I get the impression he's quite enigmatic.
Well, it's interesting.
I don't know what he's like.
You're quite sympathetic. I mean, you feel sort of sympathy for him within the book, so you've made him quite sympathetic, but also made outrageous claims within. Do you know what the legal situation with that of writing a diary just because it's a spoof? You're allowed to do it.
I think you have my name is on it. So. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not by him, it's very silly. There's lots of drawing. I did loads of drawings in it, which was fun.
Oh, because you're a fantastic artist. Yeah, yes.
Thank you very much.
They are. Yeah, it's a fun book you can dip in and out of, but you can also read it as a book. So it works both ways, I think. But there's lots of funny stuff. There was something I was going to pick out, but I can't remember what it was, and I haven't got my glasses on there. But Dominic Raab is trying to change COVID-19 to HOVID-19, so it sounds like Hovis. So it's a bit nicer. The problem is it hard to satirise something like this when they're also fucking terrible and ridiculous and I know this is a question satirists gets asked all the time, but when the situations are so ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's but I've enjoyed Saturday Night Live's Trump and Biden stuff. Have you seen that?
Yeah, we watched that. Yeah,
and Jim Carrey does very good Biden, actually.
Yeah.
So it's still, I don't know, it's probably easy, but it's not as but they are kind of grotesque characters anyway.
Yeah.
But no, it's easy. It's easy to satirize them because they're quite cartoonish.
Yeah.
So it's not hard.
No, you know? No.
Okay. I mean, people always said, didn't they, that David Cameron was very hard to do an impression of, really.
Yeah.
Whereas Boris is a dream for any impressionist. Trump is a dream for any impressionist.
Yeah, true.
So it's not hard, you know. But they are very cartoonish themselves.
No, but how's he managed to get? It's kind of incredible the sticking power, the staying power, and that how far will that go with Trump? But they just the refusal to budge. And his whole thing when, the Barnard Castle thing, the excuse just sort of fell apart as he was even saying it, the eye test. And so I put my family in the car to see if I was safe to drive my family on a motorway by driving 30 miles on country lanes whilst I thought I was blind. You know, no one goes, I mean, I think maybe they did, but, that's worse than what you're being accused of.
Yeah.
And yet he's still... is Teflon and can't be got rid of, so it's...
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any strong feelings about Cummings, really. No. I really don't. I mean, people go apoplectic at his name, like Trump and Boris, I suppose. Yeah, I don't really have any strong feelings about them.
No.
But the most interesting thing is how his mere name drives people crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what I think. If someone who was driven crazy by him wrote this book, it would be a different thing. I think it's a very enjoyable read.
Very affectionate.
It's affectionate, but also it's just it's silly. I think someone who had an axe to grind would.
Yeah, my favorite part is his Russian diaries.
Yes, that's great.
That's my favorite, and that's got nothing to do with any kind of
anything
you could say that's satirical about Cummings at all.
No,
it's just a kind of stream of consciousness.
Good. Well, it's well worth a read. Do get it. What a lovely Christmas gift. I mean, it's not as good as The Problem with Men by Richard Herring, which is also available. If you're going to buy one Christmas book, you can get this. You can get that inside it.
You got the cover. What's that?
That was the thing I've signed. I haven't got one here. I'm not going to leave it. I've just took it away. I usually have one here to flash, but it's what it's like, kids. It just says The Problem with Men. It's got my name on it. It'll be fine.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Let's talk about, unless, I mean, we're jumping around, but I want to talk about Toast of London, and I want to talk mainly about Clem Fandango, which is what I think when I saw you at the airport was all I talked to you about was Clem Fandango.
Okay. Yeah.
I love Clem Fandango.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think the whole I came to it quite late, Toast of London, and then watched the whole thing basically in one lump, and it's extremely good. But that
good,
the Clem and Matt is awesome. But yeah. How did you? Because the Clem Fandango character, I mean, you wrote it with together, didn't
Matcha,
you?
Matcha, yeah.
Was that his idea, or was that your idea? Because it's a very active...
I don't know, but Matt will do lots of voice. Matt Berry will do lots of voiceovers. Obviously, so you'll be familiar with all these kind of very cool people behind the glass. But of course, the thing is, you know, the pay is so. I don't. Have you done voiceover? You must.
You know, I've only just started doing little ads in my podcast now. Is the only thing I do. Yeah. We were always kind of against doing ads before. So yeah. I never did them.
But they, as you know, they pay vast amounts of money to do for you to do voiceovers.
Yeah.
But they have to get the money's worth. So I think there's one bit of Toast where he just has to say yes, just the word yes.
Yeah.
But because you know, in real life, you'd be paid £1,000 for doing that. They have to keep. getting to do variations of it so they're getting their money's worth.
Yeah.
So you can imagine all these people and execs behind the screen just desperately trying to get you to do as many variations as possible.
It's all the turning off the phone. It's very, very acutely observed of that kind of person, the ideas he's coming in with, but also the chatting away with the talk back off and coming back.
Yeah.
He's very, and I think I said this when I saw you, but that actor occasionally crops up in other stuff.
And he is a serious actor.
But, you know, it's very hard to take him seriously when you see him in anything else.
They're great. Both of them are great as well. Danny Bear is the other one. They're both great. But, like, when I see Hugh Laurie in anything, I just can't take him seriously because he's so funny.
Yeah.
He looks amazing. And he's so, like, I was a huge fan of Hugh Laurie back in Fry and Laurie days.
Sure.
I just cannot take him seriously in any drama. And he's one of these people who, as he gets older, gets more a bit strange looking. And just, have you noticed? Well, I'm a huge fan of Hugh Laurie.
Yeah.
I think he's a loss to comedy. And, it's a shame he went into drama, really. Not for him.
He did pretty well.
$1 million. $100 million. But, I think Hugh Laurie is brilliant. He's just one of the funniest people, and it's strange that he's now in he's in that David Hare thing.
All right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. He's brilliant, but he's a loss to comedy. That's what I think.
Well, there we go. Let's talk a bit about Father Ted. The thing about, they just showed a clip of Father Ted when I was on Sunday brunch, just as a little. And the weird thing about Father Ted, I've seen them all much more than once, but I guess because time's passed and my brain's falling apart. And there's so much of it, really. There's, 30 or so episodes, something like 28?
25.
Okay.
Including the Christmas special, it's a neat number.
I'd completely forgotten the one with the... They showed the one with the milk float, the sort of speed parody with the milk float, which is just such a classic. There's so many classic bits in Father Ted that you can forget bits of Father Ted and go, oh, my God. The bit where he's moving the cardboard boxes out of the way of the milk float so he doesn't slow it down. do you remember the genesis of that episode? Was it just literally?
I was watching Speed.
Yeah,
yeah, that must have been it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. People remember because brilliantly in Ireland they've just released a bunch of Father Ted stamps. Did you know that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
absolutely brilliant. Which is such, I really feel it's just the nicest thing that's happened. That there would be the Irish Post Office would release loads of And they've got all the slogans on the stamps, like, sure. You know, like, the money was just resting in my account. Yeah. It's not photographs of the actors. It's just slogans from the show. Okay. And it's the weirdest thing.
And great. Ireland didn't take it to heart straight away. Is that right?
Or... Well, I don't think anyone did. I don't know. I don't think it got great reviews or anything initially. There was Ben Thompson, who was a journalist with the Independent on Sunday. Yeah. He rang us up and said, "I really like this. Can I interview you?" So that was the first hint.
Okay.
That some priests reviewed it in Ireland, I think, for some of the newspapers. I think one of them said, "You know, I wasn't at all offended by this. I just didn't think it was very funny."
But it must have been quite, even in the 90s, that must have been quite a big thing. And I mean, if the world's moved on so much, places like Ireland and Scotland have moved forwards, and places like England have moved themselves backwards for 40 years. But, it feels like it was quite a bold thing, even though it's a very affectionate pastiche of...
Yeah,
of Catholicism.
It's not hard-hitting satire at all.
It isn't, but it's great because it's so silly, and I think it was at a time when comedy was going in a different direction as well. I think like when we did Time, Gentlemen, Please, which was the Al Murray sitcom.
Yeah, yeah.
We felt then, this was 2000, we felt, oh yeah. God, I'm fed up of all this, you know, documentary style, serious, no jokes kind of comedy. It was before The Office even, so you know. It'd be nice to get back to like a traditional audience sitcom.
Yeah.
You know, it already felt that things had turned the other way at that time, and you were sort of obviously fighting against that as well, and just saying it was done in that old-fashioned way in front of an audience.
Yeah. I mean, we it was, and Alan Partridge was out at the same time, the sitcom.
Yeah.
In fact, Armando, he was shooting Partridge after Father Ted, so he came to one of the Father Ted recordings. And was asking us, because, you know, he's very thorough, and he was asking us all these questions about sitcoms, which I thought, wow, it's amazing, Armando Iannucci's asking me about comedy, wow. But Partridge was done as well, as you know, in the studio as well. But they had the funny thing with that the audience couldn't actually see the set because it was kind of closed off or something,
right.
On one wall. It was very odd. But yeah, so that was what we did when 94 was the first, 95 was when we did it. So it was kind of, they did become, those audience sitcoms became kind of, the critics didn't like them.
And just silly. Well, and
The Office changed a lot.
Yeah, yeah. But I think even before The Office, because I think there was the silliness, just jokes became like a bad thing. It was all about, you know, personal characteristics and looks and someone being offensive and everyone looking more shocked than they would actually look. Because that's the one thing with The Office. I loved The Office.
Office is great, yeah.
Yeah, but I felt, the one thing I felt about it is when David Brent's dancing around or do whatever he's doing, everyone would be actually pissing themselves. They wouldn't be aghast going, they'd be going, fucking hell, this is, we've got a chance to laugh because he's dancing. But, you know, it was all about that kind of offense and stuff, and it's a charming sitcom. But I think the thing with Father Ted is it's, as a result, it's sort of ageless, isn't it? There isn't much in there to kind of tie it to its
maybe
its time. So
I suppose the fact it was set in Ireland, not even Ireland, some imaginary island off Ireland probably helps that as well. But but the stamps, that's a reason, like 25 years,
yeah,
so to be honored, that was amazing.
Yeah,
a set of stamps. Have you had a set of stamps?
I don't think there's any this morning, Richard. Not Judy stamps. Don't there's any? There will be my ventriloquist. Well,
a commemorative medal.
Nothing. There's nothing. I've never been. Had awards or anything.
Commemorated.
I'd like someone just give me some stamps that I can use to post.
Yeah. Or maybe a state funeral.
Yeah. That would be nice. But of course, you're in I, Man and Partridge as well, so you did some acting. You've done occasional bits of
very
acting.
Little. Yeah. In fact, I was wearing a luxuriant wig in that. But a few years later, I was walking down the streets in Dublin, a street in Dublin, and this Garda van, a police van, pulls up with two young policemen in it, and one says, come here, come here, come here. So I walked over and he just said, "Aha!" I said, "I've always wanted to say that to you," and drove off. Absolutely berserk.
He thought you were Steve Coogan. He could have maybe thought you were Steve Coogan.
Well, yes.
Was that a fun time for you acting in that, or was that?
I did very little acting in that. Really, very little. I was in Father Ted a few times.
Of course, yeah.
But you know, Pauline McLean used to tell me quite rightly, you know, you're taking the part away from a real actor.
Yes.
And she was absolutely right about that. No, I was. I never. Yeah, I was never seriously going to go on to Palladium.
And do you prefer that? Do you think it's sort of, because I'm sort of halfway between in the, I mean,
yeah.
I like writing, and I like sort of being a bit anonymous, but obviously I also like performing and going.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Hundreds of people, so I can see both things. But do you think that it suits you personally to be sort of out of the limelight, or do you sometimes look at the people you're writing for and think, why have they got all this stuff going on?
I would very much like to have been in the Beatles.
Yes.
But I just wasn't in the right place at the right time for that.
No.
Have you read Craig Brown's book about the Beatles?
No.
It's really good. There's loads of anecdotes about the Beatles. Like Ringo in 1961 decided he'd just go off, he'd go and emigrate to America. So I think he even lined up a job there or something. And then he realised he'd got loads of forms he had to fill in. So I couldn't be bothered signing doing all this. So he didn't bother filling in the forms and then ends up in the Beatles.
Yeah. Well,
so
if you'd stuck with the Joshua Trio, you never know. You never know where you'd be now. That's the book that should be written.
What do you like U2? Have you ever come across
I don't really role? Like U2. I'm not. See, I'm quite rare. A lot of comedians want to be rock stars, but I was always just interested in comedy, and I wasn't that interested in music really. I don't really.
So you're still not really interested? I'm more than I was,
but I sort of like punk rock, but only because my friend.
Yeah.
I liked anything with. I like clever lyrics, so you know, I like everything. I have a very eclectic musical taste, but I think basically it comes down to me liking the words more than the music. So I like anyone.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I listen to loads of music. I never listen to the words. In fact, you know Desmond Dekker, The Israelites. You know that song?
I do.
I've heard that about maybe a million times in my life, and I always think the first line is "Wake up every morning of the same thing for breakfast." Well, it's not that because I looked it up. And it's not that at all. But I can't even remember what the real lyrics are.
Well, some songs and like, doesn't matter. Some songs about the feelings, but I think, you know, I don't know what it is about music that I think I objected to the way it people were defined by what music they liked, and I think as a kid, and I think as a kid, that's the first time, you know, but I'm happy when it's comedy, but I think as a kid, it's the first time people define themselves, and you think, but I'm not allowed to like that person because they like Phil Collins and we like the Sex Pistols, so we're not allowed to be friends. And it sort of felt like weird and artificial. And I felt also that a lot of people, which I think is true of a lot of things that people like, that there's people who lead and there's people who follow, and a lot of people don't actually care that much. So, like, I was a punk rocker, but I absolutely didn't give a flying fuck about it. Yeah. I was a good punk rocker because I didn't give a fuck about
it. I was just the right age for punk rock, a bit older than you. So in Dublin, in September, October 1978, all the punk bands came to Dublin. Like, I saw the Stranglers, the Jam, the Clash, who else? The Ramones.
Wow. Okay.
And the Buzzcocks within 1.5 months.
Amazing.
The end of 1978.
Cool.
Like, Paul Weller, they came in from the back towards the stage, and he passed just by me, and I saw, like, it was a bit 2 feet away from Paul Weller's hair, which is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. It was just amazing. It was just the best.
Yeah, we used to joke about Bruce Foxton's hair for some reason. That was we had a running joke about Bruce Foxton's hair.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it wasn't.
He used to leap around a lot.
He did, yeah. The Rick Buckler, the drummer's brother, was our art teacher. So
really,
So when Rick Buckler was in. He went on to be in a band called Time UK, because there was an American band called Time, so it's called Time UK, and they played the Kings of Wessex. And I remember being there, but I then read my diaries and I was too scared to go because I thought I'd get beaten up, so I didn't go. So So it's like, it's a weird thing there, but I was quite into the Jam.
The Jam had a... I did like the Jam. I saw a Style Council documentary recently, and the Jam documentary. They're both on Sky Arts.
Yeah.
But Rick Buckler, I saw the Jam, and I quite liked the Jam. But there were a three-piece powerhouse, really basic. But Rick Buckler had a massive drum kit. It was like one of the biggest drum kits. So he had like just three of them. But he had this massive drum kit, and you couldn't see him behind the huge tom-toms.
So the Jam isn't a very good name for a band, is it? The Jam, it's a bad name for a band. The Beatles is a really, really bad... If the Beatles hadn't done well, that would be bad name.
But they obviously outlived their name.
Yeah.
That's what happened with them. Like, that was a great name for 1961, 62. But, you know, they just outlived their name completely.
To the point where no one gets the... You know, no one even realises it's a pun.
Yeah.
You know, so you say, yeah. You people can live their whole life, and you go, you know, the Beatles is on beat. It's great. You know, it's the fucking worst name ever.
Yeah, it's a great name for a band that's doing Please Please Me, but not a great name for a band that's doing Revolution Number 9.
Or a band that's going to last more than 6 months.
It's actually a brilliant name for a Beatles tribute band.
It is.
If the Beatles had spelled B-E-E-T-L-E-S, the tribute band called the Beatles would be great.
But it's a great name. Both are bad. Calling yourself the Beatles with a double E is a bad name as well. And the Jam, it's like some jam. Some
the best
jam
name, should have called the best name for a tribute band I've ever seen was me and Graham were looking through Time Out once, and we saw a tribute band called the Below Average White Band. Which is pretty good.
That's the level of touring I'm at, or certainly was at when I was touring, that the theatres I was in would have just had a tribute band of some kind in there. So I was at the same level as, you know, not even the Rolling Stones kind of tribute bands, but, you know, there's so many tribute bands. It's an incredible... And then it just, you must get, especially when someone dies and you get to the point where you're much too old to play the person.
I knew a journalist in Hot Press, and he interviewed Rod Stewart once.
Right.
And Ireland's Rod Stewart tribute act, I can't remember his name, Gary something, he just died on stage. He was doing his Rod tribute and he just keeled over.
Oh my God.
And the journalist said this to Rod, and he said, you know, he was on stage and he was doing Hot Lays and he just died. And Rod says, always takes it out of you, that one.
Oh, man alive.
Rod's very funny. Rod is... I like Rod a lot. He's great. Not the story about his Christmas gift to Elton John.
No, go on.
Because they used to exchange Christmas gifts every year, and Rod, one year, he said, well, Elton's going on tour next year. I'll tell you what I can get him. I'll get him a little portable fridge so he can put all his champagne in it.
Okay.
So he gave that to Elton as a Christmas present. And in return, Elton gave Rod an original Rembrandt. I like Rod. That's great.
So let me talk a little bit. We'll go back to messing around in a sec. Let me just talk a little bit more. I'm quite interested in Paris, that you wrote for Alexis Sales. So this was before Father Ted, right?
It was, yeah.
And but it wasn't. I remember watching it, but I think I only watched the first episode. Why do you think that one didn't work and Father Ted did work? Because Alexis Sale is so amazing.
Great. Oh, Alexis was really good to us, and we wrote a lot of his sketch shows.
And the sketch show is, one of the most underrated. It was one of the best sketch shows, I think. Even out of all the ones you wrote for, I think it was a terrific sketch show.
Yeah, we wrote quite a lot for that. And he used to come round to Kilburn to visit us and stuff.
Right.
And that was 1994 that we did Paris. And that had lots of the day-to-day people in it.
Right.
Rebecca Front was in it. Marba was in it.
Right.
Snyder was in it. You know, all these people.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, who knows? If you could bottle the formula of success. Maybe it's my fault. It's probably your fault.
You probably messed it up.
I had a part to play in its lack of success.
And Father Ted was going to finish anyway. I know, obviously, Dermot dying made that definite, but it was that was going to finish anyway. I had a weird thing when I heard Dermot Morgan had died. We had literally just come off stage off the first series of This Morning, Richard Not Judy, which was recorded on a Sunday afternoon. And we came off and we were in the BBC bar. We'd done that series in the BBC and we were celebrating the BBC bar. And I heard my manager, John Thoday, say somebody, Morgan, had died. And I thought Piers Morgan had died. And that is the biggest gap between hearing one person's died and then finding out who has died in terms of Piers Morgan dying and Dermot Morgan dying. It's a very different reaction to that thing. And that's my... It hurt me even more because...
It wasn't Piers Morgan.
I'd set myself up for, Piers Morgan's died. And then it was the worst possible thing. I mean, it must have been a lot worse for you. I know he's a big hero of yours.
I knew Dermot in Ireland before. Obviously, yeah. I knew him before Father Ted. And he was quite successful in Ireland. He'd done a radio show, which I wrote one sketch for. He was very well known in Ireland.
Yeah.
But he was very pleased to get the job in England.
Yeah.
But he died, obviously, and we recorded the final show on Friday. He died on Saturday night, and then we had to go in on Monday to edit the show from Friday.
Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was odd.
And he was, I mean, like, again, at the time, I was obviously in my mid-20s, so I felt, he was still quite old. He's 45 years old, so it's like an absolute disaster. It's amazing you could still be 25 and have that little self-awareness of how close 45 is to you.
I think his father died from a heart attack at exactly the same age as Dermot had.
Oh, dearie me. There was talk of bringing Father Ted back as a musical, which obviously there's plenty of reasons that isn't going to happen right now, but is that still on the cards? Because it seems
it's
like
on the cards. Yeah,
it was going pretty well.
It was written. Yeah, we had rehearsals. There was Neil Hannon.
Yeah,
wrote loads of great songs for my friend Paul Woodfull. He wrote lots of good songs for it. But as you know, the theatre had a little bit of a stumble earlier on this year, from which it hasn't quite recovered.
Yeah.
So it's on hold, but like lots of things are on hold. I don't know what's going to happen with it.
And how did you feel about bringing it back? Did it feel, because obviously you brought it to an end as a TV series, and did it feel, you must have worried about it looking like it was cashing in or looking like it was bringing something back. And obviously you've not got, I presume there's not the same cast at all, because most of them aren't with us anymore. But
well, it was Graham, Graham Hattrick, the production company, I'd often mentioned it to us over the years to do a musical, but Graham was always against it. But then he just got an idea that he could do it.
Yeah.
So he had an idea to base it around. So, it was his idea really, and I just kind of went along with it. But it's on hold. I don't know.
Yeah, I think people will want to see it, and if
the songs are really good,
the
songs are really good. In fact, if it doesn't happen, you can still have the soundtrack album of a show that never happened.
Do you think theatre's going to be able to come back from all of this?
No.
Generally? No.
Never.
I mean, it must
be... No, it's over. That's it. It's gone.
It started from nothing, so we must be able to build it up from nothing again.
It would have ended anyway, more or less at the same time. People are fed up with it. There's no point to it. That was it. So, yeah.
This second lockdown, are you in lockdown in Ireland or is it allowed?
Yeah. I haven't really noticed much difference. I just didn't go out since March anyway. So,
no.
Quite seriously, I just presumed this is going to be it now forever. So that's fine. I'm not 20 years old.
Well, that's it. I think for a middle-aged man who work from home anyway, it's maybe not the biggest disaster.
No, it's not. In fact, I kind of see more people during lockdown than I did, because my wife partner, she's at home now. My daughter was home from school, so I'd see more people, after that than I did before lockdown. So, yeah. But no, it'll be with us forever, let's face it. There's no end in sight.
Well, this is meant to be a vaccine. You're not confident about the vaccine?
No, maybe, yes. I don't know.
I think it will. I still, I mean, all the time, I thought, you know, like I'm meant to be doing every Sunday, a little thing pops up in my diary saying, well, let's for tomorrow, because I was, you know, they booked in. They first of all booked something in June. And I said, do you think it's going to be over by June? And they said, well, you know, that's what it might be. And then October, November.
So,
it's just, it's weird to think, you know, it's going to be, right, it's going to be at least a year, isn't it, basically? But it could be a couple of years. I don't think Edinburgh is going to be back next year.
Yeah. So, I mean, for you, obviously, it's Edinburgh. Yeah, I mean, it's for performers, it's terrible, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, it is and it isn't. It's sort of, I mean, it is, but I think also it shows the importance, because I was saying this in another podcast I was doing last night, but when you're in our job, you need to be able to diversify, because... Yeah. What happens if you break your leg, or you know, or get seriously ill, or some way, or just are in hospital for a bit? You need to be able to do something to keep yourself going. So you need to be able to diversify, and I hope it will. You know, I hope people have managed to do that, but I think hopefully it'll make sure people think, well, I must. You know, let's move online. Let's move some stuff online. Let's move some stuff here, because
I did. That Cummings book came across. That wouldn't have happened except for the lockdown.
Of course, yeah.
And also I did a clip show for the BBC, because they couldn't send film crews out. So Matt Berry and I did this clip show just using archive stuff.
Sure.
So that was another thing that wouldn't have happened unless lockdown.
Well, I'm a ventriloquist now. I wouldn't have been doing ventriloquism if it wasn't for lockdown. So, you know, it's not all good. did you find it hard writing during lockdown, or did you find it? Because I found it. My brain was really sludgy, but I was looking after two very young kids.
With
no help from schools and all that.
Well, I was quite disturbed at the beginning, because it could have been the end of the world. It could have been like, you know, an alien invasion.
Yeah.
No one quite knew. And like, I wasn't worried about my own health, but you know, I'm in contact with people who would be, you know, vulnerable. But it just kind of that, you know, I was quite, you know, I remember doing a Zoom call with relations in America and being quite panicky after and having to drink not half a bottle of whiskey, but, you know, a glass of whiskey. So, yeah, but once I started working again, I kind of was okay.
Okay.
But a friend of mine's gone the opposite way. He's got a studio in his garden. And he's more or less living there.
Yeah.
He's more or less moved out from his house and is living in the studio in his garden.
Okay.
So, but I just kind of got used to it. I mean, I remember... My God, Primo Levi's, you know, if this is a man about his experience in Auschwitz.
Yes.
Someone there was asked, how did you get on in Auschwitz? And he just said, well, I kind of got used to it. So, you know, if you can get used to Auschwitz, probably.
Well,
that's the benchmark, isn't it?
You know, we've been very, I think the truth is we've been very fortunate in our lives to live in a period of time where there hasn't been, you know, that sort, I mean, anything like that sort of disruption, but even not to be in the middle of any war,
bombs
blowing up around us.
Yeah, it's still time.
But, you know, we've had, and so a year.
Do you often wonder about what you'd be like in war if you'd been called up?
I cannot imagine, you know, that I could do anything.
But, like World War One, like going over the top on that.
Yeah, I don't know. Would you be? But I don't think I could do it. I don't think I would be able to do it. But maybe you just do it if you have to do it. But
I don't know. Yeah, or is was that just a different generation of different expectations or different? You know,
I mean, it definitely was. I mean, they definitely. I mean, I think they thought they were doing something right. You know, I mean, the tragedy about World War One is it's sort of not really about anything. So they were all convinced that they were fighting for the right thing. You know, like England were fighting. I was just reading Al Murray's book, who really kind of put it together. But basically, England are fighting because they made a treaty with Belgium in 1851, saying they'd protect them, and have gone, oh, okay. And so they're able to go, we're doing this, we're fighting this thing. But, you know, it was such an insane... I mean, not that any war is particularly sane, but it was such a, you know... I mean, that's what I think. I don't think I could overcome that and become the kind of person to go, I'm fighting for something good. Maybe if you're literally fighting the Nazis, you could say, look, I'm
Yeah.
Doing something.
I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, but most of them.
And would you have your grandfather, grandparents? Would they have been in the World War
II? My granddad, I think my granddads are probably both. One might have been a little bit too old, and one was too young. My mum's dad's couple of his brothers, I think, died. Certainly, one of his a brother called Ernie. My son's called Ernie. And his brother called Ernie died in Dunkirk, actually. So
really, yeah. And this was who Richard was.
My mum's dad's brother, so my mum's uncle.
Your granduncle.
Yeah, my granduncle.
Wow, he died at Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
So there was a bit there, but I think my granddad was just that little bit too young to go out that first time. Maybe I was wrong.
Because my mother.
Yeah, go on.
Because my mother, did I say that earlier?
Yeah, you said your mum.
Yeah, she was.
So I don't think he made it. I think that we managed to, someone emailed me with some information about him and I sent it on to my mum and I can't quite remember what it was, but I think someone had discovered how he died, but it was in France. It was sort of, can't quite remember what happened now. That's bad that I can't remember, but it wasn't that long ago that I got that email. But yeah, so someone had managed to work out who he was and track him down and the family had never quite known what had happened to him other than he just, you know, had gone.
Yeah. Because in the First World War, I think my uncle was in the RAF, I think. Not sure. And then my granduncle and great-granduncle, they were in World War One.
Right.
But one of them was a chaplain with the forces. So we have a letter from him, you know, back, the classic World War One letter.
Yeah.
About mass, you know, horrible post-battle scenes and giving, you know, the last rites to the dying and all that.
Yeah.
So let's have that at home.
Yeah, so I think that we've assessed that COVID isn't as bad as that, or indeed any, you know, like what if it was the Black Death? You know, I remember going to like a plague museum in somewhere like Florence or somewhere like that, where they went back and told you all about the Black Death and how it killed everyone and how horrible it was. And you go, oh, you know, well, that never happened now. But, you know, it's only one notch away from that being that. And this is bad. I'm not saying this isn't bad. But, you know, we're not just chucking people into carts and putting them in a big pit. Quite yet. Yeah. We'll see how things go.
See how Christmas turns out.
I think 2021's going to be great. I do say this at the beginning every year, and every year just gets worse and worse, but that's part of the joke. I'll ask you a couple of emergency questions before we go, because I'm interested to see what I get out of you. If you could have one item from any art gallery or museum, all the art galleries and museums in the world said, we love you, we think Father Ted's great, we love Toast of London, you're allowed to take one item from any of our museums and it's yours, which piece of art or artefact would you like to own?
Well, actually, I do. I do a bit of painting, and I was doing a course in the RHA, which is the Royal Hibernian Academy, which is the equivalent of the Royal Academy in London. I was doing a course earlier in the year, and there were some brilliant tutors, and there was a painter called Colin Martin who did a wonderful painting of the interior of a space station. But I won't have that. I'll have the Mona Lisa instead. Because I could probably, you know, what would you get for the Mona Lisa on eBay? At least £1,000.
Yeah, eBay might not be the way to go.
Yeah.
I don't, but some things are so, I wonder what you would get. There must be works of art that are too priceless to sell. I wonder what you would actually get for the Mona Lisa if you did try to auction the Mona Lisa. Someone would buy it, but.
Yeah. I mean, do you watch Fake or Fortune? Have you ever seen that?
No.
Fiona Bruce and Philip Mould.
Right.
Where it's a great idea. It's just members of the public think they have a painting that might be worth something.
Right.
It might be by Matisse or Henry Moore or someone, or sculpture by Henry Moore or whatever, Lucian Freud.
Sure.
And they bring it to Fiona and Philip, who's an art expert, and they just try and analyse if it's by the artist that people
that
think it is.
Yeah.
So, no, it's very good. Yeah, there was one. Someone had a painting by Churchill, and he was trying to work out. It was supposed to be by Churchill,
right?
And it was a painting that he'd done in France. Churchill had done in France in 1945.
Wow. Okay.
So but unfortunately, I mean, all the evidence seemed to point to the fact Churchill had painted, because people actually had seen him painting it there. And yet the Churchill expert said, no, I don't think it's by Churchill. So he didn't get the 200,000 that it was worth.
Ah.
Anyway, it's pretty good, Fake or Fortune.
Okay. ever have any of Hitler stuff on it? Or just church? I suppose they wouldn't be allowed because of political correctness gone mad. Wouldn't be allowed to have Hitler
stuff. I think Hitler's stuff isn't that expensive.
Right.
I think I read somewhere.
He wasn't that good. He was much better as a fascist dictator. He found his métier and got on with it.
I think he'd be remembered more as a fascist dictator than the way Jimmy Savile would be more remembered for his charity work.
I guess that's true. Let me ask you a random emergency question, and then we'll see. Whatever this is, you're going to answer it, and we'll see what's going to go on. I won't do that one because that's a different thing. Is there a TV show theme tune that haunts you? Do you find it a haunting theme? Yeah, I think that whenever I hear the theme to Taxi,
it's very
haunting, but also it really takes me back, and it makes me feel sick because it takes me back to being whatever I was when Taxi was on, 12 years old or whatever, and it's its time. And yeah, I've sort of forgotten nearly everything in Taxi apart from the theme tune. And it actually makes me feel slightly ill to hear the theme tune to Taxi. Is there anything like that? Do you have anything like that?
Well, I've been watching, do you know Talking Pictures TV? Do you know that channel?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so great. But they have just loads of programs I remember when I was a kid, and there was one called Budgie. Do you remember Budgie with Alan Faith?
Yes, yeah, vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, well, they show that's and the theme tune to the first series of that is just, it is haunting and evocative. Like, that's 1971, 72.
It's a strange thing when you're taken back like that, just snapped back, I think. But I was
terrified. Do you remember the singing ringing tree?
Well, I don't. I do a joke about it in one of my podcasts, but I don't really remember. I don't really remember.
I was terrified by that.
Yeah.
In fact, I didn't even watch it because I was so terrified.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are terrifying. I found this week as we're recording, it's the 50th anniversary of The Goodies starting, but it's also it's the 30th anniversary of Harry Enfield's television program beginning. That seems impossible to me, right? It seems possible to me The Goodies is 50 years old, but it seems impossible to me that
yes, I know,
it's 30 years old. It seems impossible.
I totally agree. I think it's just about believable. 1970 is 50 years ago, but 30 years ago since 1990 seems incredible. But I always think Harry Enfield's TV show is the kind of beginning of the golden age.
Yeah.
Of British comedy that, you know, you were obviously involved in as well. And it was just a great, the 90s, you know.
What a time it was. But, you know, they're still great. Well, do you think, I've heard you being a bit dismissive about modern comedy in other podcasts, but is there
really?
stuff you like now?
Not my dismissive. My favourite thing is probably a podcast that Dan Skinner and Harry Peacock do called Brian and, oh God, what's it called? George and Brian or something else. Okay, it's Brian and something. It's really good.
Okay.
I haven't remembered the names. So that's not very good.
Well, we got the names of the people in it. I'll look it up.
Yeah, it's Harry Peacock and Dan Skinner's really good.
Yeah.
Roger and Brian.
Okay, cool.
Really good. It's a divorced, middle-aged couple who just, it's all done in phone.
Great. Well, I hope more messages. People will do that. I mean, again, that's what I think. This could be this little pause in comedy. Could be very fecund, I think, in terms of realizing that there's more to the internet than two old men talking to each other about the 1990s. But there's more you can do. It's nice to have, but there's more that you
I always can say, I don't believe in looking forward. I believe in looking back.
It's lovely to look back, but I think I think that's it. There's this opportunity to create stuff and podcasts can be, and online stuff can be more than conversations, though the conversations are lovely and I do love many of the podcasts that are like that, but I'm surprised more people haven't gone, hey, we can do sketch shows and sitcoms, and I think people are catching on to that now,
so
hopefully that's a way of and getting back, I think, to the spirit of Father Ted. It feels very much as well like someone at Channel 4 went, oh yeah, go on, have a go and see what and they left.
That was what happened.
Yeah,
that was Seamus Cassidy, who was head of comedy there. And we just done Paris for Channel 4 and that hadn't been a success. And he still let us go ahead.
And not really interfering with the process.
No, not at all. It was like Football Manager. Once you appoint the football manager, the boards should stay out of it. And just let... But now there is... there's a lot more interference
these
days from execs and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so you know, I think that's what appeals to me about the internet is the
lack of that. Yeah, sure.
And you know, and as it gets bigger, then I think you know there will be money there to make stuff. So we will see. So maybe there'll be some positive things for the comedy industry and the theatre industry from lockdown, but it's not looking good at the moment. And on that bombshell, look, it's really lovely to talk to you. Really lovely to see you again. And thank you very much. Do go out and buy the book. We may be giving some copies away. So check out the intro for that. And ladies and gentlemen, massive round of applause for the fantastic Arthur Matthews.
Thank you
very much. We're back next week with the guy off of Ghosts. I've forgotten what his name is. He's the husband in I don't think I've worked out how to pronounce his name. Let's say it's that, but he's really good. All right, see you. What a disaster. See you next week. Goodbye. Chris, turn us off. You have been listening to Hello Stepper with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Arthur Matthews. The music is by Pest, of course, you know that. I'm indebted to my friend, the producer, director, and all-round good guy, Chris Evans. Not that one. Also to everyone at GoFasterStrike.com. That's Chris Evans again. Everyone at Acast and everyone at the British Comedy Guide. Everyone at Sphere, who published my book, The Problem with Men. Why not buy that? It's lovely. It's fantastic. Thank you very much also to Ben Walker, my usual producer, who hasn't done anything except put the ads together for me for this audio version. So thank you for that, Ben. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to GoFasterStripe.com/badges to become a monthly badger. Chance to win loads of prizes, lots of cool stuff. You can be a cool kid and you get badges, you get a membership card, you get extra videos, you get secret emails, you get to watch my stand-up shows. They're all in there, my fan friends, so go to GoFasterStripe.com/badges right about now. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.